Welcome to this episode of the Security Clearance Careers Podcast, Clearcast, your source for security clearance, intelligence community, espionage, national security, and defense contracting updates. In our exclusive interviews with intelligence community and government leaders.
Hello, hello, and thank you for tuning in to this episode of Clearcast. I'm your host, Katie Helbling, and today I'm joined by Kate Gunderson, a.k.a. the Plain Kate on Instagram, who is a former NASA engineer and a current test pilot student and is on a mission to empower women in STEM, which I love. So today we're going to talk about her journey that led her to NASA's Johnson Space Center, including the application process, some keys to her own success that listeners might be able to plug into their own careers, mentors, and what's next for Kate. So thank you so much for taking the time and joining me on the podcast today.
Hey, Katie, thanks for having me. I'm excited to chat with you today.
Yeah, so you joined NASA's team directly out of college. You worked in the Aircraft Operations Division doing engineering support for Johnson Space Center's fleet of over 20 aircraft and supported astronauts, spaceflight readiness training, and airborne science missions. Really cool stuff. And so I'm interested to hear, let's talk about sort of your journey and how you got to NASA and really what led up to it.
Gosh, I wanted to work at NASA for as long as I can remember. I remember standing in the driveway with my dad in the second grade. And I grew up in North Dakota where it's really dark at night. So we used to stand in the driveway and look up at the dark night sky. And I just remember feeling so small and just wanting to be part of humankind's journey to discovery in some way. You know, I had heard about NASA, but everybody in my hometown in North Dakota kind of had the idea that NASA had been shut down. So they're like, you know, you'll never work there, which is kind of funny when you look back at it. You know, I decided that if there was a way to still make it happen, if there was some way to do something like that, I would find a way. So, of course, you know, I found out that NASA wasn't shut down. And when it came time to apply to college, I looked online at what types of degrees the people who worked in Mission Control had, because I figured if I don't become an astronaut, you know, the next best thing is to be a mission controller and support the astronauts. So all of them were engineers, mostly. And so I was like, okay, I guess I'm going to go to school for engineering. And I ended up at a college that required internships. And at first I was like, oh my gosh, this program is 5 years. This is just getting in my way of like becoming an astronaut and getting my dream job. And so it seemed like a bad thing, but it ended up being a great thing because that's how I really got my foot in the door at NASA. Came in through their Pathways Intern Program, and they have applications open every year, I think twice a year, for this really great program where you get an opportunity to try out different groups within the organization and see where you fit best. And then usually that ends with a full-time job offer once you graduate. So that's kind of like the quick and dirty of how I got my foot in the door there.
I love that. And I love that like you had your sights set on NASA from second grade, because like my journey is like bing, boom, bing, boom. Like at least you figured out like what you wanted to do. And so I'm interested to hear though, because you know, I've heard you want to work at NASA, you have to have an engineering degree. So it begs the question in my eyes, like, does it take a certain mind or does it take a little bit of like tenacity and grit and like willing to adapt to like the engineering mindset, if that makes sense?
Yeah. Well, I actually think that's a huge misconception, because there were also interns with me who they ended up going to work in procurement or other business areas, even civil servants who work for the government, who are not engineers. So there are other career paths, but many of us were, you know, science and engineering majors. And I think that it's funny, you know, in the interviews, you think it would probably be super technical because it's a very technical job. But the most interesting thing to me was how much they cared about how you work in a team environment. And honestly, the interview was not technical. It really focused on those topics of how you work in a team setting. And I really think that's a cool thing to value in a company, because you can have like all the technical skills in the world, but if you aren't a team player or can't work well with others, then you're going to have problems. Because, you know, I always say engineering is super hard to get the degree. It's a lot of hard work. And I think it's really hard because when you go out into the career field, you're tasked with solving some of the world's most challenging problems. So you have to lay that foundation. But I think also that, like, you know, the reason we are successful in solving those challenging problems is because we work together on teams. And so I think NASA has it nailed when they focus on that in the interviews. And so that's kind of my take on that.
That's fantastic. So getting to NASA, it sounds like you had a really great opportunity with this Pathways program and that you were able to, you know, figure out if you had your sights set on something at NASA and maybe you found another team that you worked with or worked on. And that sounds super fantastic. But anyone who has gone through the federal application process knows that it has its challenges. And so I'd love to hear from your perspective, any quirks that maybe you noticed, and then, you know, tips for listeners if they are kind of looking to embark on that process.
Well, I can really speak to it right now because I'm applying through USA Jobs for the astronaut application. And it definitely has its quirks because you basically can't like upload a resume. You have to kind of build it within the system. And I find that super challenging because I've applied to be an astronaut one other time, I think back in 2020. And I remember thinking, wow, it's so hard to set yourself apart from everybody else. But I think I wasn't doing a good job of like pulling out every single thing that I would put in my resume and putting it in there. So I think one of the most important things to do is to make sure that you read the duties that are listed in the job application and make sure that you're tying your experiences to those duties that are required for the job. Even if they might seem like they're loosely connected, find ways to draw parallels. So an example is when I applied to the Test Pilot School Fellowship, I knew that to be a flight test engineer or a flight tester, you need to have discipline. I talked about being a marathon runner, and you might think like, what does being a marathon runner have to do with being a flight tester? But I drew the parallel of like the discipline of training for a race, training for something hard when you said you were going to do it, sticking with it and all that sort of thing. And so I think in the application process for like USA Jobs or a federal job application, it's important to use those kind of examples, like draw parallels with your skills to the duties of the job. So I think that's one of the most important things. And then making sure that you're reading all of the instructions, because sometimes there are attachments you need to add. And if you forget something, then you're probably going to be automatically disqualified.
That's the thing about USA Jobs. I mean, you don't have a living profile. You're kind of starting from scratch with each position that you're applying to. And I know then even outside of the federal application process with industry recruiters or private sector, commercial sector, if it's not in your resume, you have to make the assumption that the eyeballs looking at it or the applicant tracking system that you're applying to, it should always be in your resume or in your job application if it's a required part of the assignment or job description, because you can't make the assumption that somebody's going to kind of read in between the lines.
Yep, absolutely. So to speak. Like somebody was giving me advice for the astronaut application. Don't make it so technical that the average person can't understand what you worked on or what you did or what you accomplished. I think it's important to be able to, and sometimes engineers have a hard time with this, but being able to explain what you did in simple terms, because whoever's reading it needs to be able to understand what you did or they're just going to move on to the next one.
Totally. I'm no stranger to that. I was a recruiter, so I've had to learn and speak in so many things, and I actually have no idea what the hell I'm talking about. But tell me a little bit more about the astronaut application. Like, is that long? Like, is it what someone like me would expect? They ask questions for potential astronauts. Like, tell me a little bit about it.
So I haven't finished it this time around yet because it hasn't closed yet. But so I'm making sure they give you actually a lot of space to write about each job position. So I think it was like 5,000 words or something. So I had somebody review mine, and I'm really having to put in a lot of effort to make sure that I'm fully explaining each thing. Like, cause you know, on my resume, I don't want to drone on and on about each position. So I have a few bullet points. But in the application for this, I'm putting examples of like, okay, I led the payload integration. Well, then I'll go into detail about what specifically, like a mission we did that was really successful and how I worked on a team and I was responsible for X, Y, and Z and that kind of thing. So I'm going into detail there. So for the astronaut application, I'm really focusing on the resume. And then because that's your, you know, your first thing they see, and you can also put additional skills and that type of thing. So that's a good place to really focus. And then after you submit the resume and all that, you go into doing assessments. So I found that really interesting last time. There was an essay. I think it was kind of like they gave you a prompt and you had like 25 minutes to write a response. Just, I think, showing that you can reason and you can have the ability to write well. And then there were two different assessments. I don't really exactly remember the difference between the two, but I know they were kind of trying to get an idea of how you think. So some of the questions were related to how you work in the workplace. And I remember there were like two options. And I remember thinking, gosh, both of these options sound horrible. Like, are you more like this person or more like that person in the workplace? And I remember thinking, these both sound horrible. I don't know what I'm supposed to select. So I don't know what they're trying to get at with that. I don't know if there's like some psychological thing about how long you take or the answer you select. But I found that really unique about the process. So you have to also put 5 references. And if you get some references called, I heard that's a good sign that you're on to the next level and maybe you'll get an interview. So,
oh my gosh, how psychological. But I mean, 5,000 words. I mean, I write articles that are like 500 to 600 words and I'm like, oh yeah, but like 5,000 words, that's really specific. But thanks for telling us a little bit about that. So empowering women in STEM is obviously one of your passions, just from all the interviews I've heard and seen you in. So let's chat about the keys to success in engineering and maybe how folks can pivot if they've plateaued in their current field. That's a question I get all the time. How do I pivot to this career? So if folks are making to look a change, but what are your keys to success?
I think one of the main things I like to remind people is to, always keep learning and keep your mind open to new opportunities. So, when I did my internships, for example, I was offered to do 6 months with a company. But I thought to myself, if I spend 6 months with a company, that's pretty much like 2 of my internships. And then, I really only get an opportunity to see that one company. I want to have the opportunity to experience many different things. So I made sure to make an effort to like only spend, 3 months at a company and then move on to another group or another company. And I think that's just a testament to like trying to become well-rounded. You have your interests that are outside engineering, maybe, and don't be afraid to highlight those because they're really looking for like the whole person when they're interviewing you for a job, right? So I think it's important to be true to yourself and like and try different things. And like if somebody sees potential in you for a job that you might not have immediately seen yourself in, maybe think about it and take a chance and try that opportunity because they obviously see potential in you, and that's kind of how you can grow as well. I always like to share this story. It's kind of like words of wisdom, I guess, of, I used to always think that you had to be the smartest person in the room to be successful. And I've really learned in my career that it's not about being the smartest person in the room. It's about working really hard and showing people your passion. And so I think if you're passionate about what you're doing, it'll make it a lot easier for somebody to give you a chance. And so I think it's really a good thing to like let that shine through if you're interviewing or if you're talking to somebody trying to network.
Yeah. And I think that's something that particularly in STEM or technical fields, like it can be really intimidating if you're just a realist and you're like, man, I know I'm not the smartest. But I mean, those are great words of wisdom because passion is really important. And that is how you're able to command an interview or command a room. Doesn't mean that person is the smartest. It just means that their passion is showing through. And I know that one of the keys to success in my own career and just other folks that I speak and engage with and on the podcast talk with, mentorship is really critical. It's critical in our world of national security and STEM careers. And I know that there are also numbers showcasing how it can also lend to things like salary increases and just kind of a better career trajectory altogether. And so let's talk about any mentors that you have or had, kind of how you reached out to them, because I know that's also another daunting thing, how you started the relationship and maybe how it helped you to combat isolation in a male dominated industry.
Honestly, the number one person that comes to mind is somebody I actually worked with, and it ended up being a male colleague of mine. When I was at NASA, when I was first kind of starting out, I found out about this position where you could fly on the aircraft as an engineer. Or I guess you didn't necessarily have to be an engineer, but anyway, there was a role where you could fly on the aircraft on some of these missions. And I really, really wanted to do that because I really thought it was cool that I could do the engineering work and then I could go see the mission to fruition. And it was like be a part of the whole project lifecycle. Well, I was maybe told by a couple people that I needed to wait my turn and like be there for a little longer before I do something like that. But I took it upon myself to go and talk to one of the guys who was already doing that job and that I admired. And I thought that he was a really nice guy. And so I started talking to him about his job and how he got the role and some of his experiences, you know, just being friendly. In the end, they had a meeting like a little bit later about who they were going to select for this role for the next person to join the team. And he brought up my name in a room I wasn't even in because he knew how passionate I was about it and that I would do a good job because I cared so much about the organization. He really changed everybody's mind who was maybe saying, you know, she needs to wait and she's too young. And I just always, he told me about how he had advocated for me. And I really felt so touched that he would do that for me. And so I think sometimes we think mentors have to be this like structured thing where you go out and ask somebody, will you be my mentor? But I think it goes deeper than that to maybe just making friendly relationships and showing people that you care about them and want to know more about, you know, you're curious about what they do and that kind of thing. So I've found the most success in those informal mentorship situations or advocate situations. But, you know, there's nothing wrong with if you see somebody you admire to reach out to them and ask if you could grab coffee or lunch or something and learn more about their job or how they got to where they are. I think those are all valuable experiences.
Yeah, I mean, I would totally agree with you. Like, it has always been kind of cringy to me personally to be like, will you be my mentor? Will you have these quarterly check-ins with me for 30 minutes to an hour? But yeah, I mean, like, I think about some of my former colleagues that like were totally mentors to me, but it was just never that like formal thing that you're kind of speaking to. So I love hearing that. And like in these like careers and agencies, even, I mean, we work with both contractors and federal agencies, like obviously super important to have, you know, women and, you know, other populations have a seat at the table. But it sounds like sometimes you just kind of need to like nudge yourself and be like whispering my name, like Kate Gunderson, and to get that seat at the table. And so that's a really cool story. Thank you so much for sharing that. So, I mean, Kate, again, I really appreciate you joining the podcast to talk about some of your experiences. Really cool career thus far, but you're currently in school. So I'd love to hear a little bit about that and kind of what's next for you. We've heard about the astronaut application, but tell us, you know, about what you're doing now and what's next.
Sure. So this program I'm in requires me to be at school for like in and out of school, working and going to school for a 3-year period. And I'm only 9 months, a little less than 9 months away from graduation. So I'll graduate in December. I'm very excited about that. And then, yeah, so I'm on the job hunt looking for what I'm going to do post-grad. So I've been talking to, you know, anywhere from government to the industry side as well, trying to just see where I'm going to fit best and tackle a new challenge. So I'm definitely looking at some government contractors that do require security clearance. So that's something that I've never had to do before that is definitely on my radar.
And so have you kind of started at least the conversations for that process or even, you know, actively filling out the SF-86, like where are you at in kind of that process?
Definitely have had the conversation about, you know, I know it can take a long time. So that's why I'm getting a head start now. And every company I've talked to is very receptive to like, you know, of course they want you to already have a security clearance, but if you don't, it seems as though they're very receptive to getting the process going and making it as seamless as possible. But yeah, I haven't actually started any of that. Everybody, of course, wants to wait until you've accepted an offer. So I'm just trucking down that road right now.
Well, and that's so good to hear. I mean, you obviously have a skill set that's in really high demand. So that's one thing I tell people, like, if you want someone to sponsor your security clearance, gain skill sets in fields where there aren't as many candidates and get a head start on the process. I mean, that's great. Like, December is going to be here before you know it. Congratulations. Like, we're definitely going to send you a graduation gift. But I mean, yeah, so start early, but take a look at what the job landscape looks like, but what the candidate landscape looks like. And, you know, engineers obviously in high demand, they will be for at least the foreseeable future, if not forever, because, you know, that field is constantly changing. So again, Kate, thank you so much for joining the podcast today to talk about your work at NASA, what you're doing today, and what's next for you in the world of government contracting and engineering. And so for more information, listeners, on government careers, contractor careers, and even working at NASA, you can visit news.clearancejobs.com.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of ClearedCast. Hit the subscribe button and share this episode with your friends and colleagues. For more security clearance updates and national security career advice, subscribe to news.clearancejobs.com. If you have an active clearance, refresh your profile and search Cleared Careers at clearancejobs.com.